I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior. That's the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. We've got Flora.
Hello.
Kay.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
So the new issue of the Week Junior magazine is packed with great stuff, as always. Inside, you'll find news about the elections that took place in England, Scotland and Wales. There's a guide to taking up paddle tennis, Flora's article about 100 years of the Royal British Legion, plus, of course, much, much more. If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior, you can get a six-week free trial by going to dennismags.co.uk/The Week Junior. All you got to do is use the code podcast. So on this week's show, we'll be talking about a change in COVID restriction rules, the holy festival of Eid, and an exciting British swimmer. Plus, we'll have a debate all about fans owning their favourite football teams. But before all of that, given that we'll be talking about someone who hopes to compete in the Olympics this summer, which Olympic event would you most want to compete in if you were good enough? Assuming, of course, you are, I'm guessing, all excellent sports people. But Flora, which one would you go for?
I think mine would be trampolining, because it was actually the only team I was in at school. And I had a leotard and everything. And I really enjoyed the actual process of what I think is the closest thing to flying into the air. But I did once, my debut show, I forgot the routine midway through and just sort of bounced and did some balletic movements. But I don't think I convinced the judges.
I
think
say,
I was disqualified, in fact.
Oh, no.
That's tragic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, OK, Flora's bringing us some trampolining flashbacks there. Kay, how about you?
I'd go for equestrian, which is horse riding, just because I think horses are just so beautiful and graceful.
That is a very good choice. Michael, what have you gone for?
Well, if I were a good enough breakdancer, then I would love to compete in breaking, which is competitive breakdancing, which was an event at the 2018 Summer Youth Olympics and will be making its full Olympic debut at the Summer Olympics in Paris in 2024. So I've got 3 years to brush up on my breakdancing skills.
Well, I think I speak for all of us when I say we are desperate to see that happen, Michael.
Maybe one day if we do a Week Junior show live, I can do some breakdancing.
You can breakdance in the corner. Amazing. I would like to do archery. And it's one of those sports that I've always assumed I'd be very good at and have absolutely no reason to back that up at all. I just like the look of it. I think it looks quite fun. So that would be mine. I also want to know, what is everybody's favourite fact from this week? Flora, what have you learnt?
My favourite fact from this week was that there were 20 candidates for the London Mayor, which was a record. And these included Count Binface among them, whose policies include the following. No shop should be allowed to sell a croissant for more than £1. And loud snacks must be banned from the theatre.
You know what? They're not bad ideas, are they?
They're not bad ideas.
Kind of behind them. Kay, what have you learnt?
There's a stunt school in France for future stunt women. This is because most stunt people are men, and so men have to, like, pretend they're women and wear wigs when they're doing stunts in movies.
I didn't know that, but I do now know where I'm spending my summer holidays. And Michael, how about you?
Well, I found out that the creator of Pokemon collected insects as a child, and actually that childhood hobby was the inspiration behind Pokemon.
Oh, now you've said that, that kind of makes sense, I guess, because you can take bits of them and kind of put them into the creatures you're creating. That's a great fact. Now it's time for real or rubbish, and I believe, Michael, you have got a story for me to test my critical thinking skills.
Yes, so you might have heard people described as an old soul every now and again, which is when someone is young but is maybe wise beyond their years. Well, there's a teenager in the US who could perhaps be described as an old soul because they have moved into a retirement community surrounded by elderly people. Now, this wasn't their intention. They just saw a flat that they liked online, decided to move in, and when they arrived, realized that it was actually part of a retirement community that was set up for retirees. Now, this teenager says there are actually many perks to living in a place where everyone else is over the age of 65. They say it feels like they've got an extra set of grandparents. When they get back home after work, everyone asks them how their day was. So this 19-year-old, amongst all these elderly pensioners, has actually found quite a nice home for themselves. Now, what do you think, Bex? Does this story sound true to you, or is it faker than a set of false teeth?
surely, you know, when she moved in, this teenager, surely that person was stopped by the, I don't know, the welcoming committee? Surely when you hand in the paperwork or you pay your first bit of rent, people are like, actually, you know what? I'm so sorry. You've got the wrong place here. This isn't for you.
Maybe they made an exception.
I think it's very hard to get into a retirement home at the best of times. So if you're about 50 years or whatever it is, the maths is terrible, out of the age bracket, that seems very difficult to accept. But maybe they've just decided it was an error. They just like having this person around because, you know, grandparents like having somebody to chat to, don't they?
Can I just throw a curveball into this story?
Yeah.
When we were discussing it in our editorial meeting, our art director of the Week Junior, Dave, revealed that this exact thing had happened to him.
Ooh. I mean, that does make me want to know more about Dave's life, let's face it. Right, we'll find out the answer at the end of the podcast. If you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, if you don't know the answer either, feel free to make your guess right now. Let's go on to our three most interesting stories of the week. Michael, what have you been finding out about?
So as the number of COVID-19 infections is continuing to drop and more people are getting vaccinated, lockdown restrictions are being eased. So from the 17th of May, there are going to be some new rules introduced in England, which will allow friends and family to hug each other. It will also mean that six people or two households can now meet up indoors and up to 30 people can meet outdoors. And secondary school and college students will no longer have to wear face masks in classrooms or common areas. As well as that, cinemas, which I'm very excited about, are going to be reopening, as well as theatres and museums. And people will also be able to eat and drink inside cafes and restaurants. The Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced all of these rules, and it's because everyone else has been following the rules so far, and because, as I said, infections are going down, people are getting vaccinated, and so hopefully this is the next step towards normality and coming out of lockdown.
Yeah, it's pretty brilliant. So tell me, what about the rest of the UK?
So yeah, so in Wales, cinemas, theatres and museums are also expected to reopen on the 17th of May. And actually in Wales, people have been allowed to hug family and friends since the 3rd of May. And also since then, two households have been allowed to meet up indoors. The Welsh government's actually due to update the rules on the 14th of May, which is after the Week Junior went to press and after this podcast was recorded. So keep an eye out for that. In Scotland, cinemas, theatres and also arcades are due to reopen on the 17th of May. People there can already eat indoors in cafes and restaurants. And Northern Ireland is due to announce new rules on the 24th of May, which could include households mixing indoors. So wherever you are across the UK, hopefully you'll be able to hug friends and family, to go out to cinemas and museums and get to do more stuff over the coming weeks.
Yeah, things are slowly starting to change a little bit. Michael, thank you for that. Now, Flora, tell me, what have you been finding out about?
I've been finding out about a very special festival at which around 2 billion Muslims around the world began celebrating on the 12th and 13th of May. And this is the festival of Eid al-Fitr. The date for Eid depends on the sighting of the new crescent moon from the holy city of Mecca, which is in Saudi Arabia. And Eid falls about a month after the start of Ramadan, which we talked about a month ago on this podcast, when Muslims pray, read the Quran, which is their holy book, and follow various religious customs with the aim of strengthening their faith. And one of these customs is fasting, which means that many Muslims don't eat or drink anything between daylight hours, but children don't have to follow this one. And Eid al-Fitr means the festival of breaking the fast. So the idea is that you come together and you break the fast together. And for this story, I spoke to a reader called Salik Ahmed, who's 11, and he said that usually Eid is a time to put special clothes on and go to the mosque. And he meets friends there, they exchange gifts and sweets, and afterwards they go home for a nice meal and see family and just generally have lots of fun. This year, with COVID restrictions, Salik's family, like many around the world, will be marking Eid from home.
Yeah, so how else do people celebrate Eid?
So on the actual day of Eid, Muslims thank Allah, which is the name for God, for giving them strength during Ramadan, for fasting and all the other religious customs that they follow. They wear smart clothes, they decorate their homes, and they make lots of food to share with family and friends. And they also give each other presents and donate money to charity. So in many ways, it's a bit like Christians celebrating Christmas. And in countries where many Muslims live, like Saudi Arabia, Eid is actually a national holiday, and celebrations last for up to 3 days. And there are special prayers and special greetings, including Eid Mubarak, which means Happy Eid.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thanks, Flora. That's fascinating. Now tell me, Kay, what have you been finding out about this week?
Alice Dearing is our cover star this week. She's a young British black swimmer who's hoping to qualify for the open water swimming event at this summer's Olympic Games in Tokyo, Japan. She's also the co-founder and lead ambassador for the Black Swimming Association, and she's trying to use her voice to showcase what swimming and learning to swim can bring to people.
So does Alice have any advice for young people who are interested in learning how to swim or who maybe want to get into competitive swimming themselves?
Yeah, so she says that the best way to begin is to sit down with your parents or guardians and look for local classes. She says it might be daunting at first, but you've got to persevere and keep at it.
That's pretty good advice for life in general, I would say. Kay, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Now it's time for the big debate. And this week, we're asking whether fans should own football clubs. Who can tell me a little bit more?
I can. Back in April, six Premier League teams announced that they were going to form a European Super League. However, days later, they all withdrew because of the backlash they faced from fans. And since then, there's been protests around the UK. On the 2nd of May, a Premier League game between Manchester United and Liverpool couldn't go ahead because Manchester United fans broke into the stadium to protest against the owners of their club. And more than 100,000 people have signed a petition calling for the UK to adopt the 50+1 rule that they use in Germany. And this just means that for German club fans, they've got a vote in key issues, and no more than one person can own more than 49% of a club.
Okay, this is very interesting indeed. I am going to be charging Michael and Flora to argue for and against this. First up, well, as usual, guys, you know, there's a minute. Flora, I'm watching you.
I usually go under.
Usually, yeah, we're not going to make it like add it up and then divide it into a median. So it's going to be Michael versus Flora with a minute. Coming up first is Michael arguing pro fan ownership. So Michael, whenever you're ready, take it away.
Well, I'm a football fan, and I think I would definitely be very good at owning and running a football club. And I think nobody knows their football club better than its supporters. And while some owners of football clubs might be fans of the team, many of them aren't and have left clubs in a bad situation. They might only be in it for themselves, want to make money, and not actually have the club's best interests at heart. And I think in Germany, as Kay was talking about, it's been shown that you can have a fan involvement, fan ownership, and it can work very well. Also here in England, clubs like AFC Wimbledon are owned by fans and have been very successful. They were formed in 2002, and since then they've risen from the ninth tier of English football all the way up to the third. So fan ownership has been shown to be successful and effective. And also football clubs are meant to represent the area that they're from. That's why they were founded. And having fan ownership will make sure that clubs don't become too detached from their local communities. So I think absolutely fan ownership is a brilliant idea.
Lovely stuff, Michael. Thank you very much. That was a well-argued debate. Good example of Wimbledon there. So Flora, it's your turn to argue against him. Whenever you're ready, go for it.
Well, I'm not a football fan. I'm not really interested in football, but this makes me perfectly placed to make my case because you don't actually want passion involved when it comes to ownership. No. A detached, business-minded manager, such as myself perhaps, is the right person for the job because they can see clearly what needs to happen to make the club do well, and their emotions aren't entangled in their decision-making. And I'd say that the fans do own the club anyway, in an emotional kind of way, as we heard from Michael's speech. The players rely on the fans to turn up and support and cheer them on, to connect them to the local area. And the manager is the figurehead, but the fans are the body of the club. It couldn't survive without them. What would ownership actually add to the experience of being a fan? I read that Millwall fans have a chant, no one likes us and we don't care, which I think is brilliant. But they couldn't really hold that line if they were the manager, could they?
Oh, you're well under a minute. You shocked me.
Well, I started speaking really fast because I was worried that it was going to go over.
My goodness, you were like, 52 seconds or something. To the point where I was genuinely shocked. Right, so, Kay, what do you reckon?
I don't think that fans should own football clubs. Just from seeing them, like, breaking into stadiums and stuff, they don't seem... Well, some of them don't seem like they'd be good in charge.
Okay, interesting. I'm gonna agree with Michael, actually, because I feel like Michael knows his football and I trust his judgment on this one. And I think it might make it a bit more grassroots if the fans have a bit more control. But of course, as usual, let's face it, it's the listeners who are in charge here. So let us know what you think by responding to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/polls or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why. Now, last week on the podcast, we debated whether young people should have more freedom. A massive 84% of you thought that you should be able to play without adult supervision. And here are some of your comments.
I look after Pop Jam for the Week Junior, and lots of people were talking about this debate. One user who was in favour of unsupervised play said, as long as they know how to play safely, I don't see any reason why not.
Some Pop Jammers felt it depended on the age of the person. One said, I think that kids under 6 should be supervised, but anyone older can be unsupervised, because then they can use more creativity to come up with games. Another posted, I personally think that if they are younger than 10, they should definitely be supervised, but if they are older than 10 and quite mature, then they should be able to play unsupervised.
One person on Pop Jam focused on the importance of being outdoors. They said it depends where they are playing, but getting fresh air is good for you and calms you down. Also, playing boosts your imagination. Another had the comment, yes, playgrounds wouldn't have been made if they weren't safe for children.
So remember, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate. Then send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it out on next week's show. Before we go, it's time to reveal our real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me and the listeners of what it was?
So this is a story that a 19-year-old in the US has moved into a retirement community.
Right, okay. That was a very good, quick, one-line recap. Not giving too much away there. I have to say, I'm on the fence about this, but Flora may have tipped me over the edge into one particular answer. Because if this happened to Dave, this could actually happen in real life.
But Dave, it thinking. Happened to him in the UK, whilst this one also happened in the US, I think.
US, right, okay. I do think.
US.
Well, let's not complicate even more, Flora. Let's not bring that into it. I would say that my stumbling block is surely when she applied for the house, you know, somebody would have read her date of birth and thought that seems a bit odd. That's my only issue because I know they're quite strict on those type of things. But maybe it was human error. Perhaps they just saw it and thought, oh no, she's just written numbers down the wrong way. I don't know. Who am I to guess? Well, I say who am I to guess? I'm literally here to guess. I am going to say, mostly because it happened to Dave, I'm going to say it's real. I will say the story has actually happened.
Drumroll, please. It's real.
Yes!
If it can happen to Dave, it can happen,
it can happen to
anyone. And yeah, so even though the houses were designed for, it's meant to be a retirement home, they said if a younger person really wants to live there, then they can't stop them. And the 19-year-old Madison Cahoot says she really enjoys living there, she loves her neighbours, and they're all very happy. So quite a nice story, actually. People from different generations living together and enjoying each other's company.
Oh, I like that. I would watch a film about that as well, I think. That was great. So that is it for the Week Junior Show this week. It's goodbye to Flora.
Goodbye.
Kay.
Goodbye.
And Michael.
Goodbye.
Remember, drop us a comment on Pop Jam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe or follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code podcast.